50 years ago, the Beatles embarked on their American and Canadian tour, and it was coming up on Monday, the 15th. It's the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' appearance public hall in Cleveland. We thought we'd tie that in with a new book that's out called The Beatles and Me on Tour. It's written by journalist Ivor Davis, who was he traveled with the Beatles as the only British newspaper writer invited on the entire tour, working then for the London Daily Express. Ivor, good morning. Thanks for spending time with us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, and I'm glad to be on your show, and I hope the weather's not too bad in your neck of the woods.
Oh, not too bad. A little darker, cloudy, but other than that, that's what we expect here in September. Do you remember anything about the weather or the climate of that summer traveling through America?
Well, all I remember is the summer was a pretty hot summer, and it wasn't all to do with the Beatles. I mean, a lot of it was to do with the Beatles, but particularly in the Cleveland area, well, I remember that show because it was one of the most unusual events of the entire tour.
What made it so unusual?
Well, first of all, it was the first time on the whole trip that the Beatles were stopped in mid-concert by local police. There was a guy called Carl Baer, and there was an inspector called Mike Blackwell who decided that the girls were getting a bit rowdy, and they stopped the show, much to the chagrin of the Beatles. And the Beatles were actually, believe it or not, shipped back to the dressing room. This had never happened at all on the tour. But finally, peace was restored thanks to the good graces of Derek Taylor, who was their press agent, who went on stage and sort of asked the audience to calm down, don't invade the stage. Did they want to listen to the Beatles or did they want the Beatles to leave? And the audience screamed yes. So they calmed down and the cops moved off and the Beatles moved back on stage.
I would think they would have screamed, yeah, 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 perhaps, or something.
They did, actually. I'm sorry. You corrected me perfectly.
Oh, you saw them at the concerts previously to this. Was there anything that you thought maybe this was getting out of hand?
Well, what kept happening was, particularly in Cleveland, and that's why I remember it, and I must tell you that I have fond memories of Cleveland because, number one, my daughter went to Oberlin College, and I have some great friends in Olmsted Falls, just near you. But what I remembered about Cleveland was that the police presence was overwhelming. I mean, they expected the worst, and they didn't get it, but they got a pretty madhouse, believe me.
I'm looking at your Twitter feed where you've done something that's quite unique. You kind of take it on what would have been like as a journalist to have Twitter back in 1964. So every day or so often you put down things in context that happened that day. You were going through some things where apparently in Florida, did you encounter a hurricane? Is that what I'm looking at here?
Yeah, we had a Hurricane Dora, which diverted us from our next stop to Key West, Florida, where we had a few days off. And then that was one of the weather problems that the only weather problem that caused disruptions for the Beatles. That's on the entire trip. But otherwise, it was a crazy ride. And Cleveland, as I said, was a crazy visit.
Did they really take Ringo's drums and nail them down to the stage?
They did. When they actually finally got to where they were going on the next stop, Jacksonville, they actually had to do that because there were 35 mile per hour winds following Hurricane Dora. So poor Ringo was nailed down to the drums. Well, his drums were nailed down because we were worried that he'd get blown away, maybe end up back in Cleveland.
Yeah, I presume that this was a time when the Beatles were really going through a lot of changes. So what was it like from the beginning of the tour to the end of the tour?
Susie, they started off not knowing what to expect. But then eventually they suddenly got into the rhythm of it because Paul said when he was coming over to America for the first time on the concert tour, what are we going to give America? They've got everything. Well, they gave them the most unique thing that could ever be. 24 concerts in 35 days, and it was unbelievable. What they expected and what they got, well, it beggared belief.
We're talking today with Ivor Davis, who was with the London Daily Express, the only British newspaper writer invited on the entire tour. How did that come to be?
Well, it was a fluke, pure unadulterated luck. I was a correspondent on the west coast of America. My editor called me and said, get on the plane to San Francisco. The Liverpool lads are coming over. We want you to travel with them, eat with them, sleep with them, drink with them, play with them. And I did play with them because they used to have 3 a.m. games of Monopoly with John in his suite because he was trapped in his hotel. And the ride began for me, and I never knew what to expect. And it was quite crazy and quite remarkable. And I finally, after 50 years, got round to writing about it.
Did John have a favorite Monopoly piece that maybe was his lucky charm?
Well, John, believe it or not, liked to buy the most expensive pieces of property. So he would actually cheat badly. When he rolled the dice and never got on the property, he said, I'm doing it again. So he was a terrible cheat on Monopoly, but I got my own back when we played poker because I won a few shillings from him.
How much research did you have for this book that you've put together, The Beatles and Me on Tour? Did you have, like, notebooks full? Did you just using your memory? What kind of a resource?
Well, it was a combination. Number one, I spoke to Art Schreiber, who was a Cleveland radio guy who was with me. Art is a fantastic journalist with a great memory. I called him. I also had all my columns because I was George Harrison's ghostwriter. And so I had my columns for my London newspaper. I had my reports, which I went back to England and dug into the archives. And I spoke to guys like Art Schreiber, who was working for the radio station in Cleveland at the time, and other people who were still around. And I pulled it all together in just about a year and a half.
What kind of memories were coming back to you as you were putting this together?
Memories that I couldn't believe, and yet they happened. Memories of strange events, of me going into John Lennon's suite, showing him a wonderful 50-cent wig I'd bought, and he hated the merchandising. He grabbed it from my hand and he threw it out the window. So that was the end of my wig. And then all the autographs I got from my friends, but never kept one for myself. And look, we were not visionaries. 50 years ago, the Beatles were young, callow men, and I was a young, callow guy. So we never thought that you and I, the three of us, would be talking 50 years after they hit Cleveland.
It's funny to look back at those times. You kind of mentioned the wig, and I was looking at your Twitter feed, which I believe is iDavisBeatles, right, on Twitter?
It is, thank you. Yes, it is.
And you had a tweet a few hours ago, this day in 1964, do you ever go unnoticed, asked one girl. Only when we take off our wigs, replied Paul McCartney.
Exactly. Well, Paul, you see, they had the press conferences in Cleveland as well, and after a while they got a little bit monotonous, so the Beatles would write their own script. They would improvise on the spot. They were very, very funny. Because they thought, well, either answer the questions in a straightforward, boring way, or let's have a bit of a laugh. And they had a great sense of humor, all four of them.
I'm looking at different things that you've written, and there's a lot of those from place to place where girls try to find out their hotel numbers. What stories can you tell us about
that?
Well,
I must tell you this. I remember this vividly because I was at the Sheraton Hotel in Cleveland, and I don't know if it's still there, but I just checked into my room, and then a young girl banged on the door, and she said, I'm Ringo's sister. What room is Ringo in? Well, I knew that Ringo didn't have a sister. So I told her, I knew she was trying to get to Ringo's room, and we had that kind of stuff with young women trying to sneak into their rooms or to hold their hands or whatever they wanted to do, and it was a constant battle to keep them out, and the Beatles kind of had fun with it. They liked to meet the girls as long as they were over a certain age.
Yeah, one thing that happened in Los Angeles said Groucho Marx gatecrashed the party.
Well, what happened was, the head of Capitol Records, Alan Livingston, had a big party for charity. And everybody, all the stars were invited for $25, as long as they brought their sons or daughters or grandkids. And so Groucho Marx actually showed up. He lived in the neighborhood, but he didn't have a kid. So he gatecrashed the party. And when he was there, he boasted that he was in because he likes to go to parties where he got free food and free drink.
When you were through with that tour, what did you do after that? How did your their career, life change, occupation?
Well, it wasn't really, because, I mean, again, as I said, I didn't realize that 50 years from now we'd be talking about them. So I went back to the usual newspaper stories, the floods and disasters and the marriages and divorces of the Hollywood stars that are hovering, and I just followed the Beatles' career like most of us did and saw that, by golly, they suddenly went from young unknowns to legends half a century later. So I just followed them in the normal way, nothing too exciting.
Yeah, and I'm looking at your bio a little bit. You also covered a book about Sharon Tate murders. Those were on we're at the 45th anniversary of those just passing in that part of the country as well. When you were putting this book together, did you have family members who didn't believe you were the guy that was on the tour?
Well, no, nobody actually believed it because I never really talked about it. I know it sounds crazy. I mean, from time to time, people said, well, you know, you've been a correspondent in America. What did you do? And I said, well, you know, I was with the Beatles on their first tour. We got very close to the Beatles because in those days they didn't have bodyguards and minders and people keeping you away. And then as I talked about it, people were fascinated. And so I woke up one day and said, hey, you know, I think I should write about it. And that's what happened. I finally got round to writing about it half a century later.
Our guest today has been Ivor Davis. The book is called The Beatles and Me on Tour. It's about his experience with the Beatles during the summer of 64. When did that tour officially come to an end?
The tour came to an end about September the 22nd or 23rd when they'd performed in New York. They all went back to the motel near the Kennedy Airport. They all got a little bit high with a little help from Bob Dylan and a few cigarettes. They were absolutely groggy the next morning. We went to the airport. They headed back to Britain after what was really a concert tour that changed the history of rock and roll.
Now, you're a journalist, but were you a fan of the Beatles at the time, or did you have another British group that was more your style?
Well, to be honest with you, I wasn't a fan of the Beatles. I wasn't a fan of the Rolling Stones, who were also around at the time. Dave Clark Five, that was another group. But in those days, communication, as you know, was pretty poor. I knew about the Beatles. I couldn't Google them. And to this day, I wish I'd taken my iPhone camera with me 50 years ago.
Being able to capture all of those special moments. But
exactly.
You've done the best with words and stories about the Beatles and me on tour. Ivor Davis, our guest. Ivor, thanks for sharing the time. Appreciate it. And again,
thanks for having me.
50th anniversary of the Beatles coming to Cleveland, coming up on this Monday.